If you're thinking about sensitive cells, we did, for example, a result, an experiment with insect cells. Insect cells are used for production of, for example, vaccines for animal healthcare, and they are sensitive. They're not used to the shear stresses in a big bioreactor. And with the company, we benchmarked our system versus their established system, which was also optimized. And we, in the very first try, doubled the cell density.
Hey, smart biotech scientists, welcome back. We are in the middle of a conversation with Patrick Bongaerts, who is the CEO of BioThrust. And if you haven't listened to part one of our conversation yet, please go back. And today we are continuing our journey and we're talking about the stress-free cultivation conditions in bioreactors to achieve higher cell concentrations and quality. Stay tuned for an insightful conversation. Are you juggling the complexities of CMC development while trying to enjoy the beauty of biotech? Have you ever wondered if there's a way to simplify bioprocessing? Welcome to the Smart Biotech Scientist podcast, where we're diving headfirst into the very challenges you face. We're breaking it down, demystifying the jargon, and giving you the keys to unlock your full potential. I'm your host, David Brohlman, and I get it. With 15 plus years in the biotech industry, I face the same challenges you do. There's a way to simplify and streamline so you can remove complexity, you can skip trials and errors, deliver without delay your groundbreaking therapy to clinics at market, and still enjoy every single step. Do you want to learn how industry experts and I did it? Grab a cup of coffee and your favorite notebook and pen. Now is the time to take your bioprocessing game to the next level. Let's smarten up biotech. And now I'm curious, compared to traditional stir tank bioreactors, are you able to cultivate at similar densities or much higher, or how does that work?
That it's also highly depending on the cells you put here in comparison, because for CHO cells, we are reaching like the benchmark systems. We also did some runs here with established CDMOs from Germany, for example, and we reached also their benchmarks. So we are on the same level as classical CHO cell cultivations. But keep in mind that CHO cells are not sensitive to shear stress. So we didn't expect a higher output. We got a bit lower stress signals from those cultivations. For example, the lactate level, which is a sugar the cells produce if they're having stress, it was lower in our results, in our experience. But when we just having the eye on the overall cell density, we had the same as the benchmark in the classical stir tank reactor. But if you're thinking about sensitive cells, we did, for example, a result, an experiment with insect cells. Insect cells are used for production of, for example, vaccines for animal healthcare, and they are sensitive. They're not used to the shear stresses in a big bioreactor. And with the company, we benchmarked our system versus their established system, which was also optimized. And we, in the very first try, doubled the cell density. And I think this is quite astounding if you're thinking about how complex the systems are. And just by introducing our membrane stirrer and getting the bubbles out of the reactor, we just doubled the cell density.
And how do you manage the pH control? Because obviously, yes, you overcome the mass transfer hurdle and you are able to bring more oxygen into the culture at lower shear stress. But then on the other hand, you need also to control the CO2, for instance, in your culture. How does that work with bionic or bioreactors?
That's a good question. And upfront, we had no real clue, but we can show right now that also we can induce a certain amount of carbon dioxide versus the membrane. So the membrane is permeable for oxygen and carbon dioxide, and this opens a window for very close process control, because in the in-gas, we can adjust the carbon dioxide. And if we just want to raise or lower the pH, we can raise or lower the amount of carbon dioxide in our in-gas and getting more carbon dioxide into the bioreactor or out of the bioreactor just by diffusion. And with that, because carbon dioxide is slightly acidic, we can also control the pH of the bioreactor. So we're having a high surface where we can inducing carbon dioxide, more than 20-fold what is regularly done by the headspace aeration. And so we can fastly and precisely control the pH.
And what are the challenges you encountered while developing this technology?
There were, of course, a lot of technical issues. So my professor said, Patrick, half the work in membrane science is building up the module, checking the density and the sealing. And we will also face scalability issues because when we're thinking about membrane processes, we're having that the membrane is also a surface and the volume is always three-dimensional. So we're having one potency less than the media or the volume, which is growing. But we figured out some tricks to do it on the scales we did to keeping that ratio on the same level. So maybe one word here that the audience has an idea in which scales we're operating. So we're working between 250 milliliters, so quarter liter, up to 200 liters right now. And we're also seeing, so we did prototypes and see that this worked. And we think also we can do 1,000 or even 2,000 liters next year.
Out of curiosity, do you see an upper limit, an upper scale-up limit somewhere?
Physically, we are quite sure that this is between 1,000 to 2,000 liters. It's just about the transfer and the surface-to-volume ratio we can achieve with the density we inducing of the hollow fibers here. So we think this is limited so far.
Okay, so one of the challenges you have faced or you're still facing is obviously the scale-up. What other challenges have you faced or you're still facing?
So when it comes to membrane modules, the automatization is always an issue. Also in established industries like nephrology for dialysis patients, but also in the ECMO systems for the artificial lungs for humans, it's quite manually fabricated still. And also we having an eye on that and want to making as much as automated as possible. And I think there's also some room to discover when it comes to modern robotics and then introducing them in a production system. But manufacturing is quite challenging here. And also beliefs of people. So it's not a technical issue. It's more a mindset. And some professors also in my university, he said, Patrick, this will never work because already big companies face the challenges with membrane aeration, for example, Bayer, and they didn't made it, he said, to bring it into the market, so you will also fail. But this was more motivating than frustrating for me. And right now, it transfer rates and bigger volumes than those groups before ever did. So I think we are on a good way here. But just to overcome the thinking of people.
Yeah, that's a good point, the mindset. And we've highlighted that before in our podcast. We work in a conservative industry. And I think that's definitely a challenge when you're developing a new technology. Obviously, yes, you need to work on the technology, but you need to do a lot of marketing, quote marketing, or talk about your technology to change the mindset. And this leads me to the next question, Patrick, because if we look now towards the future, what future developments do you see in this space and how will it benefit our industry?
Oh, that is a very good question. And I really have to hold back my advertisement part. But I think we can't wait to adjust protocols to harden stem cells for classical bioreactor production. We have to help the patients right now. And if we can establish so-called allogenic stem cell therapies, which are therapies where we are having one donor of cells or one source of cells, and they can be given to a lot of different patients, we can also lower by a lot the cost of stem cell therapies. Right now, just a few hospitals all over the world are able to doing those stem cell therapies and a very high costs. So between several thousands to millions of dollars, those therapies per application will cost. But when we scale this up with the allogenic approach, we can lower the amount of costs by a lot. And so this stem cell therapies could be covered by health insurances. To making this technology, this medical approach, which can cure so many sicknesses, could become a treatment for the masses. Let's phrase it this way. This is our vision, and we think this is worth getting up every day and work on that.
Now for biotech scientists who are on the fence, they see the potential of this new technology, but because of any fears or mindset, they're still hesitant to implement that technology. What advice would you offer us for integrating a bionic bioreactor system effectively?
I think you already mentioned that we are in a conservative field and people having some remarks maybe at new systems. But I think what's also very wonderful and beautiful in working in this field is that people are scientific nerds. Those people look on data, look on papers, and can overcome their beliefs. And this is something quite unique. You maybe won't find that in churches, for example, or in religion, but here in science we do. We overcome and question everything. And if there is good proof, people will adapt, even if it takes time. We are right now getting application notes. And I think when we can publish those application notes, people will have a first glimpse on what is possible. Even though if people can't wait until those datas are published, we are also looking out for application for people with new applications or where they see the need and we rent our systems, for example. We will make it possible to get those systems running to that the people can experience how easy those membrane aeration systems are in operation.
What do you think are the next steps to expand the reach and the impact of your stress-free cultivation solutions for cells?
I think also the application notes and papers to getting more into show the academic field and also which is what comes behind the production therapy developers, especially that there's some a new kid on the block which has some cool tricks, and also getting into the market. Right now, I'm going from conference to conference to present those technologies to see some of the people from the audition in Canada and the US in May and June at the ICT in Vancouver and the Bio in San Diego, where we come around with our booth and also our prototypes to show them around. But we are getting a lot of inquiries about how to use the system, and we're having a lot of discovery calls with those partners, and this is all we can do right now. And we did already the first step to get that into the field because we left university and make this a company because we think this is accelerates the penetration of the field by much more than just writing papers about that and staying in university.
And can you let us in a bit the story of how you left the university, how you spun off your technology and became a company? What are the challenges you faced and what is the excitement?
As I already mentioned, we had the idea of that technology and the first working prototypes as we were in university, where I had my small research group as a PhD student, and Moritz was at my side, our CTO right now, and we architectured those modules and made the first patent applications. And during that time, we got a lot of support by the university, and they really tried to help us to make this a spin-off. They helped us also with the patent situation, the patent application. And so it was kind of easier to get out of university than if you wouldn't have that support. During that time, I didn't finalize my PhD, but we already applied for some grants, for spin-off grants. And there's in Germany the call the Exist Stipendia for research developments to get them into the market and get them as a spin-off. We achieved that. And with that help, we were able to working 1.5 years on even more prototypes and developing a business model. This was also the time when Konstantin came into the field, and with his background in economics, he also strengthens the team. And yeah, getting it away from just a university research group and more into a business. We founded the GmbH, the Limited, in 2022. And after that, we checked out for investors because we already know at some time the grant will be over. We did some sales also at that time for prototyping and retrofitting existing bioreactors. But then we came up to our first investor, the Freigeist Capital. They had a lot of interest in their technology and also in our vision to bring that technology to the masses, yeah, to make stem cell therapies available for everyone. They looked quite closely in doing the due diligence in our concept and our technology and what else is here. And we developed an even more robust business case out of that. And then we got the investment and at the end of last year, beginning of that year. And with that resources and with that supply we're having right now, yeah, we're building a real company. We are right now 9 to 11 employees. This is a remarkable feeling to get this rocket crew at the airport and launching.
That's awesome. And do you still have time for science now?
Personally, this is an issue, but actually I did some review half a year ago with a group where I was invited to get my experience in membrane aeration into that field. So it was not in stem cell, but more in microbiological approaches, but still this was fun. And of course, we are writing grants, proposals for grants. And this is, I think, quite close. And to bringing the visions we have into field and getting this in juries, highly educated juries, which judge somehow about our applications. This is also fun and this still works for me very good.
As we are wrapping up, Patrick, what is the number one takeaway you want us to walk away from our discussion today?
I think just because some old gray men say to you that this won't work, don't go with those no-sayers. Focus more on what is possible and even small steps accumulate to success later on if you go on and try on.
Wow, that's a great way to conclude our conversation, Patrick. It was a huge pleasure. And where can people connect with you?
We are having a website. We're also doing a refresh of that in some weeks. But I think you already get that at biothrust.de. You can find us on our website, but also if you're having an eye on LinkedIn, we are quite active there. So just search me on LinkedIn, Patrick Bongartz. Maybe we can link it in your bio. And then I would be very happy to get some feedback from the audience about what they think and what they could imagine the technology in their processes.
Yeah, I will leave all the infos down in the show notes. So please do reach out to Patrick, provide feedback, and I'm sure you would love to have people testing your technology. So please use this opportunity. And thank you once again, Patrick, for being on the show today.
Thanks for having such nice questions for me and having you at your show.
Hey, smart biotech scientists. Thank you very much for tuning in today. What did you think about today's episode? Please tell us by leaving a review. And perhaps you are wondering how you can develop a cost-efficient and robust manufacturing process. I know it can feel a bit overwhelming, and that's why we help scientists like you, number one, to get clarity, just to know where you need to start. We help you get confidence in a 90-day program where we walk you through the steps, all the critical steps, so that you can develop your process with confidence and with peace of mind. And finally, perhaps you have already gained clarity or you're confident. Then we help you take your business to the next level so that you can collaborate with other industry players. If one of these options is for you, I invite you to schedule a free call with us. Just use the link down in the show notes, and I'm looking forward to speaking to you on the call. All right, smart scientists. That's all for today on the Smart Biotech Scientist podcast. Thank you for tuning in and joining us on your journey to bioprocess mastery. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. By doing so, we can empower more scientists like you. For additional bioprocessing tips, visit us at smartbiotechscientist.com. Stay tuned for more inspiring biotech insights in our next episode. Until then, let's continue to smarten up biotech.